Chapter 10. One More Person to Find. I drove straight to Finley's motel. It was 5 a.m. "Quick, I've got something to show you," I told him. "I know how Kleiner gets the paper for the counterfeits." We were soon on our way to Atlanta. "So, what's going on?" Finley said. "What's special about American money?" I asked him. Finley just stared at me. "I've lived all over the world," I went on. "Every country's money comes in bills of different sizes. But an American $1 bill is the same size as a $100 bill. Kleiner is using $1 bills as paper. Hubble's job was to get hold of them. The trucks bring them to Margrave. Stoller was taking them out in air conditioner boxes to Florida. But he stole some of the boxes." "Why Florida?" said Finley. "They were put on a ship to Venezuela and taken to Kleiner's factory. They're cleaning $1 bills and printing them as $100 bills. That's what E unum pluribus means. Out of $1 comes $100. "So, where are we going now?" said Finley. "To Stoller's garage. His parents' garage." It was just as I thought. There were two big air conditioner boxes in the garage with long numbers written on them. The boxes were full of $1 bills. And the number on the box told you how much money was in the box. There was more than $100,000 in each. Finley called Picard, and we met at his office. Finley told him about the boxes. Then, I told them both about the five men at Hubble's house last night. "We knew that Morrison, Teal, Baker, and the two Kleiners were in the scam," I said. "Now we know that there were two more police officers and two warehouse gatemen. We only have one more person to find."
"Excellent work, my friends," said Picard. "Go back to Margrave, but be careful of this 10th guy. It could be anybody. I'll get Roscoe and see you in Margrave."
Back at the station, Finley and I waited. After about 20 minutes, the door opened. Picard stood there, but there were two things wrong. First, Roscoe wasn't with him. Second, he was pointing a gun straight at Finley.
"You," Finley breathed.
"Yes,"
said Picard with a cold smile.
"You've both been very helpful. You've told me what's going on. You've given me the Hubbles and Officer Roscoe. You were too late on Wednesday because I sent someone to Joe's hotel before you." "Go stand next to Finley," he ordered me.
Then Teal came in with another younger man in an expensive suit. They both had guns too. I knew immediately that this new man was Kleiner, the man who shot Joe. Picard took Finley's gun out of his jacket. He checked my pockets, but I had nothing. My jacket was in the Bentley.
"Where's Roscoe?" I said.
"Listen to this," Kleiner said. His voice was cold and calm. "You'll find this interesting."
He put a cassette tape into a machine and pressed play. We heard Roscoe's frightened voice.
"Reacher, this is a message for you. You must do what they tell you. Remember what happened to Morrison's wife, okay?
My heart went faster. I stared at Kleiner. Then we heard Charlie Hubble crying.
Paul,
she said,
this is Charlie. The children are with me. You must come back now. If you don't, they'll kill the children.
Kleiner took the cassette tape out of the machine and gave it to me.
We know that you've hidden Hubble, he said. You're going to take this tape and play it to him.
I stared at him in surprise. But
you've killed Hubble already.
You know that's not true, Kleiner said calmly. We wanted to kill him, but you hid him, and we need him back. Picard will go with you to get him. While you're gone, Finley will be in a cell, handcuffed to the bars. Picard will call me by 6 a.m. tomorrow. If he doesn't call, I'll shoot Finley. Then I'll give you another hour. If Picard doesn't call me by 7 a.m., I'll kill Roscoe.
I was thinking about Hubble. He wasn't dead. There was some hope. Picard walked me outside and pointed to the Bentley. I got into the driver's seat and thought hard. If Hubble isn't dead, I thought, where is he? And what name is he using? I took a map book out of the pocket in the driver's door. Below it, I noticed a small white pocket knife. I opened the map book and studied it carefully. I had to find Hubble. I had to remember everything I learned in the military police. At 4 p.m., I started the car and drove up to the highway.
So, where's Hubble?
Picard asked me. I don't know, I said. But I did have an idea about Hubble, and I hoped I was right. He has a friend in Augusta who might know. A guy called Lennon. I stopped at the next gas station. We need gas, I said. Are you going to fill the car?
No, said Picard. Do it yourself.
That was the answer I wanted. I got out, and Picard did too. He stood watching me from his side of the car. I filled the car as slowly as I could. After a while, Picard got bored and looked away for a moment. I quickly pushed the pocket knife into the tire and broke off the end. I finished filling the car, and Picard came with me to pay. We were about 20 miles from Augusta when the tire went flat. It was 7:30 p.m., and it was getting dark.
Stop the car, said Picard.
We both got out, and there was a cold wind now. So when I opened the back of the car, I picked up my jacket and put it on. Then I took out the new wheel and changed it. While Picard was checking the wheel, I quickly ran to the front of the car and pulled the gun from my jacket. Picard was already pointing his gun at me.
Don't shoot me, Picard, I shouted. If you do, you won't get Hubble.
He knew that he needed Hubble. I ran round the Bentley, pointing my gun at him.
Don't shoot me either,
Picard screamed.
You can only save Roscoe if I call Kleiner. I'm not going to shoot you, I shouted.
But I was lying. I waited until I was near the driver's door, and then I shot him. I jumped into the driver's seat and drove off fast.
I breathed in hard and then screamed out loud. Picard was gone.